Hello, everyone, and welcome to Produce Talks, the podcast brought to you by the Canadian Produce Marketing Association. I'm your host, Jen Ongtone, Manager of Health and Education at CPMA. Throughout this podcast, we sit down with industry experts and leaders from across the produce supply chain to explore the latest trends, challenges, and opportunities shaping our industry. Let's get started.
Welcome to CPMA's Produce Talks. Hello, everyone. My name is Dan Duguay, CPMA's Senior Director of Sustainability, and I'll be your host today. Today's episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Crawford Packaging, a leading supplier of fresh produce packaging solutions. As part of the Fall 2025 Sustainability Series, today we are speaking about the challenges, the key trends, and even some opportunities related to sustainability reporting for the fresh produce industry. Sustainability reporting is an integral part of not only responding to customer demands for the assurance that growers are, quote, doing the right things, but increasingly an integral part of the produce industry's efforts to tell their sustainability story, from minimizing food loss and waste or emissions to ensuring the soil is healthy and resilient in the face of climate change impacts, for example. So to help us dig into this topic a bit further today, I'd like to welcome our guests, Garland Perkins, owner, Fresh Endeavors Consulting, Wyatt Macy, Director of Sustainability, Taylor Farms, and John Mesko, CEO of the Potato Sustainability Alliance. So now to get us going today, I'd like to start by asking each of you to share how you see sustainability reporting. Now, for those listening, this is a conversation that Garland, John, Wyatt, and I have been having for some time, but I'd like to start off by inviting each of you to sort of share how you see sustainability reporting. It's something we hear a lot about, but sometimes I think it might be misunderstood. So to kick us off, I'll ask you to describe sustainability reporting from your individual perspectives. So Garland, if we can start with you.
Yeah, sure. I look at sustainability reporting as a lot of record keeping and communication about a company's sustainability progress and related initiatives, typically in kind of, you know, buckets that are kind of common topics that we typically see pertaining to sustainability, such as energy use, carbon emissions, waste, sustainable packaging, water conservation, social responsibility, et cetera. And a lot of this reporting is usually done through surveys for customers or online platforms. And then, you know, as well as with government bodies for things like EPR reporting as well.
So it does cover a fairly broad, again, spectrum of topics and themes, which is, I think, what makes it complex is it's not just one thing we're measuring. We're measuring multiple things. John, over to you. As part of the Sustainability Alliance, obviously, this is a central theme topic for your organization. How do you describe sustainability reporting from that organization's perspective?
Well, thank you, Dan, and it's a pleasure to be on with everybody today. And as you said, we've had these conversations, and it's great to be here talking with everybody together again. And we focus on potatoes. I think the work that we do extends and has legs to extend to other produce. I think a lot of produce industries can relate to the kind of things that we're doing. And from my perspective, sustainability reporting comes down to who's the audience and what would they like to know, and how can we convey that information to them? So there's different audiences, right? So some folks want to know what's happening on the farm, what kinds of water use efficiency is taking place, what kinds of carbon footprint is there out there on a farm, or what is happening on the farm that we can quantify and take measurements of and kind of translate that into reporting or information that the buyer might want. And that buyer could be a processor, it could be a retailer, it could be the end consumer. But I think there's another audience out there, and sometimes there's crossover. Obviously, there's probably always crossover, and that is that, you know, so what? So we saw a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, or we saw an increase in carbon sequestration, or better improvement in water use efficiency. What does that mean in terms of the product, in terms of the sustainability of the individual farm operation, for example, or the business? And what does it mean to the environment? Does that matter? And I think there's audiences that are asking all kinds of questions along the way there. And the challenge that we face, I think that we face in the broader sustainability industries, how do we How do we make it an easy? How do we simplify and make it easy to address all those audiences with the information they need without making it burdensome or invasive or challenging to the grower or to other reporters in that chain?
John, I think, as you say, there's so many audiences. Again, you've got the complexity of the different themes that Garland pointed out, and then you've got this mix of audiences who kind of want to know your story, but you almost have to tell the story in a slightly different way, depending on that audience. With that, Wyatt, from your perspective at Taylor Farms, what's your sort of definition, how you describe sustainability reporting based on your perspective?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dan. I think to echo both Garland and John, one, it's typically going to come from your buyer or your customer, or it's going to come from regulatory. Over the last several years, I think it was much more customer-centric, and now regulatory has slowly seeped in, at least in North America, whereas versus the Europe and other nations. And then I think if I could simplify it to its bare bones, it's really just about either a buyer or regulatory wanting to know or want assurance. I think assurance is a big word I used, that your company or your operation is doing the right thing and is trying to lower their environmental or social footprint. To John's point, there is no uniformity or standardization yet. There's a lot of different contextuals that could be required of the reporting. Or how you use that message or report that data. So because of that, I think, you know, when you're trying to prepare, you're trying to read between the lines of multiple different requests. It can be a survey. It can be a formal Microsoft survey. It could be a simple email question. It could be a public disclosure like CDP, or it could be voluntarily you taking the initiative to align with standards like GRI or SASB. So because of that complexity, It's kind of hard to say this is what it is. Again, I think if you just boil it down to its bare bones, it's what are you doing to reduce your environmental and social footprint?
I think that segues well into sort of the next thing I'd like to hear from you about is, you know, and why you've used this term before, so I'll repeat it, sort of how to provide this assurance that you're doing the right things and doing those things right. There's a complexity in this. There's a challenge in conveying that to those different audiences, as John has pointed out. So what would you say are sort of the leading risks and challenges that you're facing related to navigating this reporting landscape today? Maybe there's a bit of repetition, but what are the two, three things that are really making this especially difficult and challenging? And maybe we'll go backwards. So Wyatt, we'll start with you. What keeps you awake at night around this challenge?
Yeah, I would kind of put this in two different nuances. One, kind of external facing. So for instance, one risk is really not understanding or considering how the information you're providing or reporting is going to be used, or how it could be used both intentionally and unintentionally, or how it could be received, both with missing context if you're not allowed to provide context most often. So what are you reporting and what is it saying about your operation and what are you disclosing? And really think through how it can be used, how it could be portrayed. So I think there's some external risks there of what it, sometimes this can be sensitive information. Sometimes it's more generalist information, but everything nowadays is pretty publicized. So I think it can have some external risk to it. Internally, there's risk of setting up your program because there's no standardization or uniformity. I view it as internal risk of over-committing to maybe a standard or a questionnaire and setting up your entire data infrastructure, all your compliance mechanisms to that specific standard. And then, you know, maybe that standard can go out of the market, can kind of not be as well accepted as you thought it would. Could be caught in a kind of a scandal in terms of verification or credibility. So I think overcommitment of certain data or points you're trying to make or goals you're trying to hit without fully understanding the landscape and even thinking proactively of where is this headed? Because again, all this data that we're talking about, all this reporting we're talking about costs money. You have to set up a team. You have to set up the infrastructure to collect that information both internally and then how to report that externally. You could spend a lot of money on software You could spend a lot of money internally chasing down certain information. So it's this balance of bang for your buck, if you will, in terms of what are we trying to convey? What is the real boil to the meat and potatoes? And how much is it going to take for us to collect that information internally or across our supply chain? And really, what value is it providing back to our operation? If we're collecting all this information and it's really not providing value to the supplier, and it's just being used as a check the box or a marketing point or a public reporting, is it really providing the value we need to make an impact in our own operation? So it has to be dual benefit. And I think that's a pretty big internal risk sometimes.
So much to unpack there, Wyatt, but I'll pick up on the dual benefit piece, because I think this segues to John, your world, obviously working closely with the potato industry and growers more broadly. I know you'll talk to the dual benefit side for sure, but what do you see as sort of the leading risks and challenges from overseeing that community?
Well, I think, Wyatt, you did a great job in kind of framing the big picture here. And this question of how is my information going to be used? We may say to a grower or to somebody reporting, we're going to use your information this way. And growers understand that they'll usually say things like, okay, I believe you that you're going to use it this way today. But what will happen down the road? What will happen when you're gone? And somebody else has that information in their hands, will they use it differently? And I think that's a real legitimate concern. I don't think we've adequately addressed it. We of course have a data policy that says we'll only use it for the needs that we said we wanted it for, and we're not going to use it beyond that. But I think there's a healthy skepticism among growers and other folks that are sharing information. I think that's something that is definitely at risk. I think the notion of trying to boil down a definition of sustainability to a few key indicators and assuming that we've identified them as the indicators for the entire of North America or the entirety of a region is a really challenging. It makes sense that we would go that way because we can't get that nuanced on every single piece of land or every single acre. But I do think it does lead to overlooking some of the things that are nuanced, some of the things that are maybe helpful and useful in telling that sustainability story. I guess, I maybe would give a segue to or a foreshadowing to some of your future thoughts on this podcast, but continuous improvement and the ability to demonstrate that we're going in the right direction is a key component of where, in my opinion, we need to go in sustainability storytelling, because we're going to say where things are today, but if we cannot adequately indicate and satisfy the need for folks who want to know, are we getting better just in general? Like, are we getting better or are we staying put? Are we going backwards? And what would that look like? How would we identify that? Maybe it looks like that question of, are we getting better? It might look different for each individual farm or each individual region of the area that we're sourcing from.
So Garland, from your perspective as a consultant, obviously advising clients in this space, so what are you seeing as sort of the risks and the challenges that the industry is maybe facing more broadly?
What I see with my clients now is very similar to when, I worked for a $1 billion company. I think the biggest issues, and, Wyatt and John have already touched on these, and we sure have talked about this quite a lot, Dan, but, I think the biggest issues are the reporting requirements are not consistent. And so it really creates a lot of inefficient reporting. We're spending a lot of time and resources on reporting. And then, Wyatt mentioned it, the most important thing here is impact. The whole reason we're all doing this is to decrease our environmental footprint. But there are so many times when we are so caught up in the reporting exercise, there is no longer time to actually do the work to decrease our environmental impact. So, all these entities who are asking us for change, we're all on the same team. We all want change. We have to agree on how we do that. The thing that keeps me up at night is we don't do that. And then this becomes a fruitless exercise. And I don't think that that's going to happen. I'm very encouraged by, you know, discussions that are happening now. But, you know, the amount of reporting, you know, the transition from a marketing function to a compliance function in the business happened so quickly. And now there's so many requirements that everybody is, you know, running to keep up with, or is, you know, having to beef up teams in order to keep up with, that we really need to, you know, get back to basics to understand, like I think John was saying, what are these indicators? What are these things that are actually going to help us to make an impact?
And I think as a result, again, there is so much effort in this space. There's a lot of actors trying to solve this problem. I think there's increasing recognition, which I think is important, of this being a challenge for the industry more broadly. So I think this is, I know, been something CPMA has been concerned with, is, you know, is there recognition of the challenge this is imposing on the industry? What can be done to improve it? And maybe that brings us to sort of the third question today, or third point of discussion, is given the scope and the scale of this challenge, and what are you seeing in terms of maybe multi-stakeholder initiatives or innovations even that have impressed you in terms of tackling this industry-wide challenge? And from that perspective, why are these efforts maybe worthy of, you know, more attention, even more support? So if I can, I'll start with Garland, maybe around that question.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, love the PSA model. So it's wonderful that John's here. That's such a great example. Not necessarily cross industry, but you, I mean, how many growers do you have participating, John, and processors? I mean,
yeah, we have over 500 growers.
Right.
We have all the major processors. And more importantly, we have over half the acres of potatoes in North America.
Which is amazing. And so that's just such a great example of galvanizing people, understanding, you know, what we're going to track, and then all moving in the same direction. I'm also, of course, very encouraged, Dan, by your efforts and the CPMA, Western Growers, you know, to bring people together to discuss this issue. So I'm encouraged by the discussions. I think where we need to go now is action. And then I also, you know, kind of not from like a trade association standpoint or industry, you know, I really appreciate people like Wyatt and other people in the industry who really approach this from a pre-competitive stance. And we're really, we all should, right? Retailers, growers, you know, grower shippers, we're all, you know, we should all be working on the same team trying to figure this out together. So yeah, I'm very encouraged by all of that. I think, like we're saying, though, that, you know, the biggest challenge remains achieving that alignment, you know, getting retailers, food service providers to have a common set of standards, and then encouraging greater consistency for regulators, you know, across states, across markets as well.
I might just, Dan, if I might just kind of tag on to something that Garland said there, this notion of pre-competitive work, the industry coming together to work on these issues, the possibility of it or the occurrence of it being voluntary, like people are voluntarily sharing their stories or telling what's going on, I think is a really, really powerful tool. When we go out and we talk with retailers, we talk with folks that we're trying to convey the value of our assessment and our results, we're saying, you know, farmers are doing this because they want to tell their story. I think that's a really important component, and it kind of ties in with some of the things that you were saying, Garland.
Yeah, telling the story, but also being able to, through that, provide that assurance that I think Wyatt mentioned a few moments ago. Maybe Wyatt, I'll turn this question to you. What are you seeing as sort of those initiatives or those innovations that are really worthy of more attention, even more support?
Yeah, it's I chuckle because, yeah, I feel like this has been my world for the last year. I trying to be optimistic. I think the conversations within produce specifically industry are happening. I think we have to keep one thing in mind, that this is definitely this is an industry agnostic effort. This is a world issue, international issue, and other industries are working on this simultaneously, and some are far further ahead than we are. There's a lot of initiatives that are further than we are. I think we can't get produce tunnel vision. I think food safety kind of helped us kind of put us in produce tunnel vision because that's our world, right? But this is bigger. I think sometimes we relate it to food safety because there is a lot of that complexity, that audit fatigue, et cetera. But this is much, much bigger than just produce. And there's one initiative called the International Financial Reporting Standard, IFRS. They formed a basis called the International Sustainability Standard Board, a lot of acronyms in sustainability. And they're working on really trying to tie in financial reporting with sustainability reporting. I think that probably has the best shot of most widely adopted standardization because it's trying to link to financials that are already mandated across the board for a lot of international companies and industry. And so I think that has a good shot, and they've already tied in with what's called SASB and GRI. And I think there's another initiative out of Europe. I think we can't overstate how Europe typically is in front of us and what Freshfell is doing with an initiative called PEFCR, which is really about like what are the metrics around environmental footprinting. I think if you, again, boil those down to the main mission, where I see, and if I had a crystal ball, I kind of see everything going quantitative. We've lived in this world of qualitative for a little bit now, and it's done good to start moving the needle. But I think it's laggard because evaluating practices is so contextual. You can't evaluate practices one supplier to another, one industry to another. It just takes too much time. It's too nuanced. And so I think we're moving into this realm of metrics, metrics, metrics for good reason. If you look at financial auditing, they audit data. They don't audit your practices. They don't come into your facilities and interview and assess your operation like that. They simply audit your books. Why? Because it's typically more efficient, more cost effective, and data is a little bit harder to manipulate. You still can, obviously, but I think that's where we're headed. Right or wrong, I'm an advocate for it. I would rather submit data because I think it's going to be much more efficient. I can repeat it for multiple customers. I can use the same data set for every customer, every regulatory body. So I think that's where I'm most optimistic and I think is the right direction. I could be swayed. I could be wrong. But that's kind of where I'm headed and where my belief system is of where we should go. And then it shouldn't be overstated what Garland said, the IFPA, CPMA, Western Growers, industry specific initiatives working on this as well. Maybe even providing feedback to IFRS or ISSB on how they're doing what they're doing. But I think we do, again, have to realize this is bigger than produce. And as much as we want to create industry specificity, I think that actually does more harm than good. It should be so high level and so industry agnostic that everyone can report on it because it's an international issue.
Right. Well put. John, anything to add to that?
I might push a little bit back on that wide. I mean, I think there is certainly a pull and a demand and a desire to boil down this storytelling into a set of metrics that we can all agree on and report on those. I think that from the farm perspective, this is, again, my opinion, from the farm perspective, we see so much diversity in the landscape and how different landscapes might respond environmentally to different practices. To simply say, our water use efficiency on farm X is this, on farm Y, it's this. It might not tell the full story, even if you had a whole array of metrics that can tell that story. Until we get that, I think it's going to be difficult to tell the story with just a set of metrics that we don't yet agree on as an industry. And I'm challenged to think about how are we going to get there. I will jump into the human health analogy just briefly, Dan. I'm constantly studying human health and my own health. And there's tons of different research on what is the best way to determine your health, right? Is it your blood pressure? Is it your heart rate? Is it your VO2 max, your ability to exchange oxygen? You know, what is the metric that we should be using? Is it that you don't drink or smoke? You know, a very prominent physician out there right now is saying that it's VO2 max. You know, VO2 max is a better indicator than whether or not you smoke or drink on your long-term health. Well, that flies in the face of everything we've heard over the last however many years. There's other people that would say it's another measurement or another measurement. So even in human health, we have not arrived at that single or even a set of metrics that we can agree on that help predict the outcomes for a biological system. And let's not forget, we can talk about the sustainability of a production facility, that's taking potatoes and making French fries. That's a whole, that's very self-contained. But when we're talking about a farm, we're talking about a biological system. I'm not sure we're anywhere closer to getting to that set of metrics. Like you, Wyatt, I could be swayed, but I think we're still trying to figure out how do we define what is health, what is sustainability on that farm. And again, I go back to, can we show continuous improvement? Can we show that, again, using that human health, can we show that blood pressure is getting better? Can we show that we're getting better at walking up the stairs or carrying heavy weights or whatever it might be, right? Whatever. Can we be getting better? I think is really where we can have answers today. Until we figure out all these other things, and we're all trying to get there, and I'm not saying we won't get there, but right now, to tell the story, I think continuous improvement and being able to demonstrate that is vital.
Yeah. I'll insert that I think why your point about the quantitative, I think, is a really important one, because I think increasingly it's probably more this question of balance. You know, are we getting the right balance between the qualitative and the quantitative? And I think, to your point, there's reporting that is heavily quantitative, and is this where the pendulum needs to swing more towards? Maybe to John's response, you know, can it go too far? But I think what's important are these conversations about where is that right point. And again, John, from your side, you know, what works for potatoes may not necessarily work for other commodities. So how do we reflect that and capture that?
You're absolutely right. And you know, we collect all the quantitative data. Don't get me wrong, right? We collect the quantitative data and we share that. But in terms of what is moving the needle or what is convincing the audiences that things are sustainable or healthy, I'm not sure that that's sufficient. It's important, but not sufficient.
Yeah. So maybe for today, what I'd like to do is maybe we'll try and maybe wrap this up in two quick sort of volleys here. But the first would be, what's the one thing that your organization is doing to help address this challenge? Like, if you were to point out to, you know, this is what we do, but here's the one thing that we're doing to tackle this. And again, maybe Wyatt, I'll start with you, you know, being involved directly in a daily operation. What's the one thing that you like to sort of start with, maybe, and saying, here's what we're doing about this challenge?
Yeah. To the last point too, it definitely is about balance. Maybe I sounded too one-sided, but within Taylor Farms, we're trying to really vet different data points, different metrics that can be utilized both externally for sustainability reporting, but also provide value to our operation teams and actually improve and help us make continuous improvement. And I think once, hopefully, if we can nail down a footprint, can we share that with the industry and at least get it started, the ball rolling? The metrics may not be perfect. It's kind of like emissions. The world get rallied around one single metric, and you're seeing every initiative use that metric as a gauge of performance. Is it the perfect one? Maybe not. I'm hearing a lot of debate around that right now, actually, and how it doesn't have black carbon and so on and so forth. So I think it's a matter of just agreeance. And even if it's not perfect moving forward, because that still gets us on the same language. And when we're speaking the same language, productivity is going to increase faster. And so I think internally we're trying to do that, and we've somewhat come up with a portfolio of metrics, and we've positioned that in what we call a charter, environmental charter, and we've started to circulate that in the industry. Again, right or wrong, we just hope it kind of gets the conversation started around what are potential metrics that get us on the same language, and that way we can have more productive practice-based conversations, because then I can trust that the practice results that you've stated to me are similar to what I'm going to find because the metrics are the same, or the data is the same, or I can trust that the data is similar. So yeah, that's kind of where we're sitting. And then around project implementation, really utilizing that data internally and kind of trying to create a similar to a financial infrastructure. How do we create that the same way for environmental and social? Social is definitely a harder one, but we're making somewhat of a headway.
Fascinating. John, I know a lot's going on at the PSA, and maybe not to preload it, but I think the work you're doing on verification is probably a key development. But anything you wish to share in terms of what's the key initiative these days?
Yeah, I think verification is something we're working on, as you said, to address a particular audience that's interested in that. But I think What I think what we're doing to help in the broader sense is two things. We're trying to reduce the burden on growers for reporting. So we're enabling growers to share their story with multiple customers simultaneously. So one survey, one assessment that they can then translate that information to multiple audiences. I think that's really important. And the second thing is we give them immediate feedback as to how their practices and their outcomes on their farm compare with others in their region. Farmers, they don't particularly like sharing information without finding out, so what does that mean? And as soon as we started giving information back to farmers to say, hey, here's some things that you said you're not doing. Other farmers that we work with in your area are doing these things. Maybe you should consider them. That's just that has created a conversation among growers around this kind of continuous improvement that is just taking on a life of its own.
That's great. Garland, as a consultant, again, you offer services, guidance, advice. What's the one thing that you're doing to help clients address this challenge these days?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I have clients because produce companies run lean, and the companies that I'm working with don't, you know, have the ability to have ESG teams and maybe not even a person doing it. They might not have anybody really working on it. So, you know, prioritization is really the name of the game. So what requirements, you know, are affecting your business the most, you know, usually is from a customer standpoint. So what are your biggest customers asking of you when it comes to sustainability? What legislation, you know, like EPR is affecting you? And then we kind of use that to create, okay, well, here's your strategy. Here's your 1 to 3 year strategy, you know, your 2 to 5 year strategy. But, you know, always prioritizing the most pressing things on the business and the ones that have the highest potential for impact.
Right.
Always have to marry those with, okay, well, if we do this, what's the economic benefit? And of course, there's not always an economic benefit, but a lot of times there is. So, you know, trying to focus on those projects that obviously have the highest likelihood of having an economic ROI in addition to satisfying customer requirements, regulations.
Yeah. And I'm glad you touched on that, Garland, that sort of that economic reality, obviously never and never ever too far from any conversation these days around sustainability and the actions around it. So maybe to close today, what I'd like to ask you all, and again, this is kind of like the elevator pitch. You happen to be in the elevator with the Canadian Prime Minister or the elevator with the U.S. President, and you say, you know, what's the one thing that you would prioritize to address the industry-wide sustainability reporting challenge? If there's one thing that, yeah, we got to get this piece right, what would that be? And again, who might that be tasked with something like that? So I'd like to start with Garland, maybe on what that pitch would be.
Yeah, I mean, I've already harped on it, but we need all the decision makers in a room to agree on standards. That's the biggest priority, first and foremost. So, you know, I think we just need more of what started to happen, more galvanizing efforts by CPMA, IFPA, Western growers. You know, and number one, we need a unified set of standards. And then number two, we need growers and marketers in the room as well to ensure that these standards are actually applicable to the produce industry and achievable from the supply side. And then, you know, again, I've already said all this, but legitimately driving environmental and economic benefit.
Right. Thank you. John, what's the one thing you would prioritize?
I'm going to go probably way out there. I think we have the mechanisms in motion today to address the current issues. So what I would say is in the long run, we need to look at sustainability from a whole farm perspective, multiple years. Not just one crop, one field, one location, right? So what's happening on the farm usually involves multiple years of planning and different practices across those different crops that are grown. So I think that's really an important consideration. The other thing I would just say is the nutrition, the outcome that we're all trying to reach is adequate nutrition to feed the world's population while not destroying the environment. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't include the nutrition conversation, we've only addressed part of the discussion. And I don't have a clue as to how to get there, but we've got to talk about sustainability's the impact of practices on sustainability per unit of nutrition in the future, because we have to make sure that we're feeding people with products that are nutrient dense and then also sustainable.
Yeah. So that food security, healthy food conversation needs to be part of this in the future.
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
Thanks, John. And Wyatt, maybe last comment for you. What would be the one thing you would prioritize?
Yeah, I'm going to go off of my normal harp of standardization data. And I really like John's point, but if I'm talking to a government official, I really think one, I'm going to say two, sorry, I'm going to cheat. One is that link between health and agriculture and funding more research behind that to really show the direct lineation between that. And then two, how do we use policy as an incentive of a carrot, not so much a stick? I think EPR had good intentions, but it was an incentivization through a stick approach, not necessarily a carrot. And so I don't know if it's going to get results that we want. And there's a lot of other policy work that has led to the same. So how do we use policy? You know, are we, how about subsidies for fresh produce rather than, you know, ultra processed foods, things of that nature? How do we use policy as an incentive carrot and not just even an incentive stick isn't that good anymore. So how do we change policy work and really stress health and sustainable transition? So whether it be energy, packaging, et cetera.
Yeah, great input. Well, I'll say on behalf of CPMA and myself, I've so enjoyed working with the three of you over the last little while around this issue. I think, again, these conversations are important. They need to continue. They will continue. As I said, Garland, your point, you know, the more of the right people around the table is what's going to be necessary, I think, to tackle this kind of issue challenge. So thanks for flagging that. So I'll close by thanking our guests, Garland, Wyatt, and John, for joining us today and sharing their expertise on sustainability reporting and the challenge and the trends. And I think our audience would agree that this is an important discussion to continue to help move this whole objective forward. I'll flag, I think, the dual benefit point. I think why you made it. This is ultimately, you got this right. The grower benefits, the customer, the consumer understands what's being done right. And then we collectively move in the right direction. So thanks again for your insights and your leadership in this regard. And thanks again to our valued sponsor, Crawford Packaging, for making this podcast possible today. Please tune into our next episode where we will be speaking actually about sustainable packaging, notably the leading trends in recyclable versus compostable versus reusable solutions and how they're helping shape the future of fresh produce packaging for the industry. So, and until then, thank you for listening to the CPMA's Produce Talks.
Thank you to our guests and to you, our listeners, for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to Produce Talks on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Until next time, fill half your plate with fruits and veggies, keep seeking new knowledge, and never stop growing.